Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today, I've got somebody from outside the circle of trust on the line. As I've promised in episodes past, that I'm going to try to bring on people more often from the outside of 343. But it's kind of interesting because as you'll get to know this gentleman by the name of Miguel, who runs a personal training company at Grande Sports Training, he isn't really an outsider. He got to know us many, many, many years ago, but not on a one-on-one basis like today. As the story goes, he reached out. You know, Benny, of course, said, Gary, let's get this guy on the podcast. And of course, I dabbled a little bit to do a little bit of due diligence. I saw a few of his Instagram reels, a few of his videos. I'm like, you know what? Miguel knows what he's talking about. And those, of course, are the only folks I want on the show, because if I bring people who don't know what the hell they're talking about, I'm doing a huge disservice to everybody. So, as I hinted a moment ago, he does personal training. He's been in soccer his whole life as well. Those who have followed us for any length of time, you might have come across our five components of player development. They are the household parent family influence. The other component is the playing on your own influence. Yet another is the pickup game influence, very important, as I'm sure you all know. Then there's the structured club training influence. And finally, the personal training influence. Now, that last one, we haven't really spoken much about over the course of the years, but it is kind of vital. It is important, and I know it's a growing industry here in the United States. More and more people are taking advantage of personal training, which is a good thing. However, as are all things, we have to discern what is good, what is bad, what is mediocre, because all three of those things exist out there. And I hope today helps illuminate a little bit more as to what is a good personal training sort of experience. With that, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Miguel. Of course, as always, nobody sponsors this episode or this podcast. We sponsor ourselves. And the way we do that is through offering a few products and services. If you are a coach, you want to go to 343coaching.com. There are both free and premium coaching programs for you there. And if you are a parent, you want to better discern what's going on in the ecosystem. You want to be able to be a good mentor, a good advisor to your child. So for you, you should go to 343masterclass.com. Of course, both of these programs, the ones for coaches and the one for parents, is the consequence of decades worth of our personal experience. It is not something that we got out of books or out of articles or out of reports and then kind of consolidated it all and then dished it out. Absolutely not. This is direct experience from folks who have eaten their own dog food, from folks who have actually been through the entire trial and error cycle. And it kind of sucks seeing so many coaches out there banging their heads against the wall, going through the trial and error cycle themselves. I kind of get that you have to go through that process to a certain extent, but I'm just looking online and I'm shaking my head. I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys are going to be stuck in these pits for years and years and years before you finally realize, man, I have been misguided. Man, I have been doing the wrong things that people told me to do. And that is the purpose of 343coaching.com. We want to cut out all that crap, all that noise that's out there. Go straight to Signal. Go straight to the folks who have done pioneering work here in the American soccer landscape. So coaches, again, 343coaching.com. If you are coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 format, you go to 7v7coaching.com, which, by the way, we're running a really good promotion at the moment. So if you sign up to that email list, you're going to be directed straight to the promotion. You can hop on board. Parents, 343masterclass.com. All right, here we go with Miguel Angel of Grande Sports Training on personal training. Many gold nuggets in here, and I hope you enjoy.
Back in like 2009, 2010, when I was still a player.
Holy crap, dude. Seriously? You're like one of the OGs.
Yeah. But I was introduced to it by a coach that was helping me with everything. And he was like, yo, check this 343 guy out. And then I realized you and your brother were doing, you know, coaching a club out in California. And I mean, I was still young. I was still like, oh, like, okay, this is cool. You know, but as I got older, I'm like, I wonder what 343 is up to. And then I started following you probably the past year, 2 years. Now it makes sense. I'm older now. So now it makes sense. Everything that you talk about, I've lived it. I've seen it. I hear it from multiple people. So it's just amazing just to understand truly what you're saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's crazy, Miguel. So crazy, man. So Benny Rogers runs our Instagram account.
Okay.
And only the past couple of months, we're like, you know what? You know, we need to start talking to some more people in the community, because up until this point, you know, I'm very reserved. It's kind of like, I don't want to talk to anybody. You know, very few people know what the fuck they're talking about anyway, you know?
Yeah, and so,
you know, he sent me your way and he's like, Gary, check this guy out. You know, he's built a huge Instagram following. And I'm like, all right, let's take a look. You know, so I go to your channel and obviously I click through a few of your videos and a few of your reels. And I'm like, okay, I found somebody who knows what he's talking about, you know? So let's bring him aboard. But now look, Miguel, I didn't prepare anything. I just figured we have a informal chat, get to know each other. And I'm sure whoever tunes in is gonna, I don't know, probably extract a few gold nuggets and get to know you better. You know, obviously your audience is huge. So it's not like you need it or anything, but I think a lot of folks maybe in my audience don't know who you are. So maybe we can start there, dude. And educate me, educate the people. Like, who is Miguel? Like, how'd you get started? How old are you? Heritage, coaching, personal training, whatever comes into your mind.
Yeah. So for sure, I'm originally from the DMV area. I grew up in Maryland, born and raised. My mom is from Peru. My dad's from El Salvador. So I have that Latin Hispanic background. Growing up in the DMV, you know, like every kid, being exposed to the game, being exposed to different sports, but I was lucky enough to be exposed to the early days of DC United. So DC United was my childhood. My dad took me to all the games. I remember just being on his shoulders, you know, and you always talk about the atmosphere of being exposed. Obviously DC United is not like going to see Boca Juniors, but to me at that time, like I just enjoyed everything, right? Like La Barra Brava. Now DC United is a completely different club,
sure.
But you know what I mean? But back then, it was just like incredible to live that. So my dream as a kid was play for DC United Academy, obviously get to the DC United team and do what I can from them. I was able to do that. I was able to play with the U16s and I played with the under 23s with Jaime Moreno when he retired. He became the head coach for that first season. I also played with Real Maryland's Academy growing up. And then eventually I was like, you know what? I made the decision maybe at 13, 14 years old, not knowing how the industry works, not knowing how the system works. I just want to play professionally. I just want to be a professional footballer like millions of kids all over the United States. But my mentality was I'm just going to do whatever it takes. So I started just learning how everything worked as much as possible, searching on Google, trying to go here, trying to go there. I ended up going to Europe. When I went to Europe at 18, which I didn't know that age mattered, you know? I went to Europe at 18. That's when it all clicked. I'm like, oh, age does matter. Because Arthur George, he's now the coach for a club in Qatar, was a coach for Botafogo and Sporting Braga. He saw me play there and he's like, yeah, if you were a year younger, I would have taken you to Braga. I'm like, oh, does it matter? Like, I don't know, you know? And then I tried to go to Peru and then I learned about the visa or passport part of the industry. I was like, we want to sign you, but you're Peruvian. Get a Peruvian passport first and then you can come back in. Yeah, fast forward to now, I moved to Miami. It was always a dream of mine to go to Miami. And ever since 2015, I started doing what I love is just being around the game, still playing competitively, you know, as much as possible here in South Florida. And I opened up Grande Sports. Initially, it was just training younger kids, just trying to pass down the knowledge. And then eventually it grew into what it is today, where COVID kind of like accelerated the growth. Just how can I share the knowledge I've learned, put it on in a way where the younger generation or the next generation is going to understand. And COVID is also the time where I really started digging deep into the tactical side of the game, because I feel like you would see a lot of things online of, you know, this is how you can get stronger for the pitch. This is how you can improve your ball dribbling skills, which is, you know, it's all great at the end of the day, but this part, mental, and then the tactical side wasn't really covered back then. So, you know, I'm still learning the game. We can never learn enough, right? There's so much to learn, but I try to dumb it down as much as possible, because you know, like it's much more deeper than just like, okay, be at this angle and go into this space. But that's a starting point, at least for a young 14, 15 year old that has never been taught that before. So that's a little bit of background about what I do and who I am. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. No, it's interesting your angle with the personal training when you say dumbing it down. You know, the way I interpret it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is you try to strip away all the complexities of the game, all the complicated stuff, all the details, really, and just strip it down to the fundamental principles, the core stuff that is universal, right? No matter what, where you go or what you do or what age or what level, all that sort of stuff. And if I imagine you're trying to refine those things. And then once they kind of get it, you can, because this is our philosophy. Once they kind of get the core, the fundamentals, then maybe you can start layering in some more complexities to the game.
Correct. That's exactly what it is. And all my players, doesn't matter what age, we always start with juggling and then just passing the ball against a rebounder. Can you do 10, 20, 30, 50 in a row? Can you juggle 100 with both feet, 100 with right foot only, left foot only? It's the most basic stuff, right? Because after that, then I can start making it a little bit more challenging. And then we can work on, you know, the garra, like, you know,
sure,
that part that you don't learn here. So, 100%.
Why personal training, Miguel, not like team coaching? Is it because of the COVID thing or is it some other reason?
Yeah, well, initially it was because I was working a delivery job and I did not want to do a delivery job. I remember one day I was working for 12 hours. I made $120 that day.
Jesus.
I was like, I need to do something else, right? So I'm like, what can I do? There's this website called Coach Up. I put my profile, got my first client, got my second client, and then I enjoyed it. I did have a team coaching job, but the way it was ran and the owners or directors of those clubs that I was with didn't really like how they were, you know, all like, no, yeah, just you can do like 40 kids and this and that. You know, I just didn't like how it was ran. So I was like, you know, I'm going to try to do my own thing and work with players that actually want to develop as footballers, right? And then we can talk about other things. But yeah, I mean, team coaching, eventually I'd like to get into it for sure.
Less money, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I would definitely do it with a great group of players that actually want to learn the game, you know? And obviously the club needs to have the same vision and everything. It's not just like, okay, just go coach these kids, go do your thing. I don't really agree with that philosophy.
Right.
Not all clubs do it, but I'm in South Florida. And if you've ever been to South Florida, there's a club in every 10 miles. You know what I mean? Everybody's the next best thing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm in Southern California. So you've got tons and tons of clubs. Most of them are mega clubs. Even the small to medium sized clubs that have existed forever have been absorbed by the big clubs. And obviously there's reasons for that. It's because of the leagues that have taken over, ECNL and MLS Next. And, you know, they don't give people access to those leagues. So the kids and the small clubs and the families, they're kind of forced into making moves, right? And joining the bigger clubs. So the whole ecosystem is effed. You know, I'm sure we can dive into some of those things a little bit later, but I still want to keep probing on the personal training thing a little bit because it's something that I think more and more American families are participating in is the personal training. And I think it's something that more and more of those families need education in, you know, is that maybe how to pick a personal trainer, what is good personal training, what is not, what it can do for you, what it cannot do for you.
Right.
Oh, like there's so many things to touch on here. And then from my own personal selfish perspective, I have a question, and that is like, how did you come across getting fields? You know, because here in Southern California, the fields are all gobbled up everywhere. It's hard. And if there happens to be an opening, they charge crazy money to use it. So then your business model gets broken. You'll have to be charging crazy money for personal training in order for it to be a worthwhile thing. And then secondly, if you just choose some random park to go to, I mean, that's cool and all, but it's got its own limitations. You feel me? So maybe you can share a little bit about the field situation.
So right now, thankfully, after being in the personal training space for the past like seven, eight years, I've found the fields that work. So during the morning time, I have a public park in the city of Hollywood, that's wide open, goals open. Park rangers know me there. They don't say anything. I'm never there with like a group of 20 kids. It's always max like 5 to 8, right? In the afternoons, it's a little tricky because now I'm competing with clubs. I would have to rent the field. I've been approached before, like, oh, you can't train here. If you want to train, you got to go through the city, get a permit, get insurance, all of this stuff. I'm like, it's just me and one kid. Like, I don't need all that. How much is it? I was just out of curiosity. Oh, it's $180 for the hour.
I'm like, right.
I mean, it doesn't make sense. I'm literally just using this little space. So thankfully now I found a park in the evenings where it's open. It's public. Nobody bothers me. There's also another park that I use that is alongside a club that is local. They compete, and then they also have recreational teams. But I'm really good friends with the technical director. I train a lot of their players, so it's kind of like a win-win, right? And they're seeing improvements. So thankfully, I've figured that out. But it was a long journey, man. I've been kicked out so many places. Because it's just, yeah, you're right. It's so expensive, and it doesn't make sense if I have one or two players to be paying for a whole 11v11 field. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's another huge disadvantage, in my opinion, in this country compared to other countries. In other countries, it's like none of this exists. It's just like, let's just go to a park and that's it. Or let's just go to a field and that's it. Or you just go to Fútbol Cinco, because my heritage is from Argentina, you know, and there's Fútbol Cinco all over the place. And you just go to a Fútbol Cinco spot, and you know, there might be other kids and other people doing stuff there, but you can do your own thing there too. Here, everything is like owned, right? And there's 100 rules, even if it's publicly owned, there's 100 rules, and you can't do this, and you can't do that, and only these hours and not those hours. And you can't go on that patch of grass because we reseeded it, and you can't go on the turf because blah 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 blah.
100%.
There's a million rules, Miguel, and you can't operate, dude. It's crazy, dude.
I completely hear you on that. Now, and thankfully, I've figured out the parks in South Florida that are open that nobody bothers, and I'm good on that. So I could say I figured it out, but I know a lot of trainers are still having troubles. You know, until you guys go through the work and figure it out, I can't really say
much
else.
For sure.
You know
what I mean? What ages do you do?
I primarily work with the youngest is 9 years old, all the way up to college level, professional level.
Got it.
And obviously with each age group, I focus on different things, right? With the kids, it's not always they want to go pro. They just want to be able to have more playing time. They want to gain more confidence, especially the younger group. They, you know, have to learn how to control their bodies, how to accelerate, decelerate, change directions, how to control a ball out of the air, on the ground, with pace, all those little things. And a lot of times I feel like the younger demographic is just not as confident, you know, because of all the things they see on social media, all the things that are consumed through social media. There's so much knowledge out there, right? And which they just don't know who to believe. And on social media, it's presented in such a way that's like, oh, shit, that's interesting. Maybe that guy is right, or maybe she's right. Maybe I should listen to them. And then they come in with this whole different, you know? So that's the biggest challenge. The older group is mostly just obviously refining the little details in their game, having that just winning mentality, depending on what level they are. You know, I have some guys that are just looking to stay fit. You know, they don't want to go to the pro, and that's okay. You know, understanding for them that that's okay. But the guys that actually want to go pro, the girls that actually want to go to a professional level, like, it's, you're here and we got to raise it all the way up there. You know what I mean? If you're trying to compete with the rest of the world. So, but it's hard to tell them that. They need to actually live it. And thankfully I lived it when I was in Portugal. I was training with a third division team, and that's where I was like, oh shit, these guys are no joke. You know what I mean? It was like, in a way, it was harder but easier, because everybody understood where to be. So like, you always had options, you know? Yeah. And it was speed of play, just understanding the game quicker. Whereas here it's like you have one player just dribbling into four players and then complaining that they had no options. You know, it's a little different. So that's the ages I primarily work with.
Yeah, I never forget, and I've shared the story before. My first time I was in Portugal, I went and watched a third division club at the time. It was Vizela. They were in the third tier about six years ago. And I just couldn't believe my eyes, man. I was up close and personal. I'm like, holy crap, like you can't tell the difference between a third tier player and a first tier player many a times. And I've been watching MLS live and in person up close and through a whole variety of modes since 1996. And so obviously the first thing that comes to mind is always comparison here to the home country. And I'm like, bro, any one of these third tier Portuguese player easily is a starter on an MLS team. Yes, they're not going to take the spot of a designated player or something like that, obviously, but could they be on a first division MLS squad? No problem. No pasa nada. And technically superior, tactically superior. Maybe there's some deficiencies there because, as you well know, once you get to the first tier in Portugal, it's all about the decision-making too and quick decision-making. So they might fall apart a little bit there, but man, it's cool that you had that experience because, in my opinion, the parents and the players need trainers that have gone through many of those things. And I came across one of your reels or one of your videos rather that discusses something I often share, that people here don't understand how good a pro is.
No, they don't.
You know which video I'm referring to?
Yes, 100%.
They don't understand. Like you'll talk to a 16-year-old or the parents of a 16-year-old or 15-year-old or 12-year-old or whatever, and they think they're like this close. You know what I'm saying? The gap is so huge, so huge. I don't know if you have those experiences as well with the players and the parents, and how do you handle it?
So I'll give you two examples. I had the pleasure of training Tyreek George, Chelsea player, just debuted in the Premier League, now 18. I trained him when he was 13, when he was here on vacation in Miami. And two things that stood out to me immediately: the way he was locked in the second he stepped onto the pitch and we started the training session. And then two, how he reacted to those mistakes. Not to mention, you know, obviously he was naturally talented, but he was a 13-year-old boy already acting as if he was like a professional. And then the second experience was training Douglas Costa, Juventus, Bayern star. I saw that player. He stepped out the car to the training session. I was nervous. First time I'm training a world-class player like this through a connection of a friend. And just immediately, his presence. After that, on the ball, the way he's warming up, body mechanics, the way he naturally just clean touch, effortlessly, right? And then not to mention when we're doing like shadow 1v1 defending, just a boom, boom. Oh my God. So clean. And the pitch wasn't the best. It was a grass pitch, but it wasn't the best. So that's where I was like, okay, well, this is a world-class player that's been training under Pep, that was playing with Robin, Ribery, Philipp Lahm, the likes of those amazing players. That's the standard now I can now see other players at. And I'm like, yeah, like the next best player is still miles off, right? I've trained like great players in the USL Championship, some MLS guys, you know, university guys, and they're all like great players, but still there's that big gap. And it's just like, sometimes you can't really put your finger on it. And then sometimes you can just tell, yeah, it's this and this, you know? And like I said, it's just like, especially for the younger 17, 18, 19-year-olds, they need to actually see it and live it to understand, in my opinion.
Yeah. And the seriousness with which they train also, like you can, it's hard to put my finger on it, but there's a something there. There's an X factor there that you can't quite communicate well when somebody like Douglas Costa is training versus somebody who may be a pro too, an MLS player, USL player. And when they're training, there's something different upstairs. Like they are literally locked in and focused on every rep and on refining every rep. But these other players, they're good, but there's something that's not quite, there's something missing, but it's upstairs. You know what I mean? It's not in the feet.
Yes. It's literally every rep. They show up to go to work, and once they're in work mode, that's it. After work, okay, yeah, we chatting, having a good time, you know, telling stories. But literally, it's literally that. Just show up to work, focus on every single rep. If it's just go here, how you're changing directions, how you're controlling the ball. Even if they make mistakes, they don't care. Next one, you could see how they, like, how do you say it in English? Se putean ellos mismos.
Uh-huh.
but like they, it's like they hold themselves to a certain standard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're not there to coach. Like a player of that level, I'm not there to teach him anything. I'm just like, here's the work we're going to do today. This is why we're going to do it, how we're going to do it. Bah, bah, bah. Boom. Thank you, Miguel. I'm see you tomorrow. You know, so it's just a different standard for sure.
You're a facilitator is the way I like to view it. Whenever the few times I've done it, the personal training, that's how I view it. Even with the amateurs and the young kids and stuff, is I'm just trying to facilitate and be that person that enables you to get your repetitions in, but 100%. Good repetitions and of the right things. You know, so would you say that is maybe the primary benefit of personal training is getting reps in?
Yeah, it's just, I feel like, especially with players that may not be there mentally, like you're there to hold them to that standard. Because now every winger that I train with, I'm like, I'm comparing you right now to Douglas Costa. Again, go again, go again. We'll stay here and do these 100 shots if we have to until you get it right. Oh, you got 3 in a row. That's perfect. Give me 10 more. You know what I mean? So if you're by yourself, you might not do that extra 10. You know, so it's just, I would say that I'm there to hold you to a certain standard and at the same time give you work so that you can progress better or quicker in the direction that you want to go to. But at the end of the day, it's you, right? It's you and how seriously you're going to take each and every single rep.
Yeah. Have you given this much thought, or maybe you've done something along these lines, and that is coming up with some sort of objective metrics? So much in football is not objective, obviously. Like how do you quantify how Iniesta receives a pass versus, you know, somebody who's not Iniesta? You know, you can't quantify it really. But I'm curious because I've thought about this many times, and you know, Benny and I and others have thought about maybe starting our own personal training practice here in Southern California, and it's something that's in the back of my head. How do you quantify whether a player is getting better or not getting better? Those sorts of things.
So that kind of moves me, or it takes me into the other direction that I'm doing now. You know, now we're moving into the world of AI, which is able to see those off the ball things. And I always tell the players, like, I look at 3 main actions, right? The action of movement, how you position your body, the action of actually receiving the ball. Like you can tell, even if the ball's on the other side, how the player is moving, what they're thinking, what they're looking at. When they actually get on the ball, what they saw, are they making that decision? And then the execution, which is a third step, the execution of that decision. Was it a dribble? Was it a pass? Was it a shot? Whatever the case may be, depending on where they are on the pitch. So I've had players that do the first 2 actions great. Now your end product is shit. We have to keep working on that. Or sometimes like they might have a great end product because they're just naturally skilled, but the way they get to the end product could be better. So that's how I try to kind of quantify or bring out the metrics, let's say, of a player. And then, of course, how much impact they have in a game. That's where I offer my services online, where I do analysis individually of each player. And I have a whole like list document of questions that I answer when I'm watching these games, just to make sure that player is doing what they're supposed to do in their position. You know?
Got it. So that's from analyzing their matches, you know, doing quantifiable actions in matches.
Yeah,
I guess I'm also asking from the personal training side. So let me give you an example, right? So one of the things that I'm thinking of starting here is something called Striker School. So it's only for strikers and nothing else. We don't, no center backs, no outside, nothing. It's purely for strikers and nothing else. So that one's easy, right? It's kind of like you set up different activities, and over the course of time, you see whether they are scoring goals or not scoring goals. And you know, you can see a trend, right? Are they getting better? Are they not getting better? Yeah, I could even implement things like a tracking radar gun and see, you know, that, all kinds of stuff. But if you're talking about maybe personal training a center back, or, you know, or a defensive midfielder or something that is not shooting on goal, how maybe can you quantify, okay, the player is getting better? Not looking at their games, just personal training.
Yeah, so I've actually worked with a company that, and they're actually here in South Florida and other parts of the country. I don't know if I can say the name of the company now, but they measure the amount of reps that you get in a certain time limit specifically like specific actions a midfielder would do. So how many times, how many passes can you get in 30 seconds? What is the time that you spend between each pass? So the, by the time that you receive and pass, and then how many correct passes have you made, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a database of like pro midfielders and youth midfielders, and then that's where you can kind of compare, right? And that's, you could say the same thing for center backs. So that there's that, right? Mm-hmm. But there's still, yeah, you can still see the differences, right? And how do you fix that? It just happens with speed of play. Those like exercises help improve the speed of play. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. But, it's hard. It's a hard problem. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, like, oh, all this stuff. It's just, I'm curious because the very, very difficult problem to solve, because everything is so subjective at times. Who is better? Is Toni Kroos better than Luka Modric or something? Two completely different player profiles. They do different things. They kind of play similar positions and roles, but no, you can't compare, you know, or who's better, Weston McKennie as a defensive midfielder, a six, or Sergio Busquets as a six? Like, everybody in the world is going to say Sergio Busquets, but why? You know what I mean? Like, oh, because he played at Barcelona, Spain, World Cup champion. No, but that doesn't capture it. You know, like, exactly. If you have no idea who Sergio Busquets is, he just shows up, right?
Exactly.
And Weston McKennie just shows up. And then you train, you know what I'm saying? Like, okay, are you going to be able to tell this guy is the better guy? That's what I'm after. I'm curious.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. I don't think there's a way right now to measure. You could argue, like, you know, if we're comparing, two center defensive midfielders, and right, what's the role for a center defensive midfielder? Like, what are they supposed to do? Complete passes, progressive passes forward, maybe break up plays, control the tempo. How do you measure controlling the tempo, right? Communicating to your midfielders to get into space, right? If I'm a defensive midfielder and I don't say anything, but the next guy does and they actually get in position to block the pass, that counts too, right? Mm-hmm. Those are things you don't really see when you're watching a match. And then that could be said for each and every single position. So I think for wingers and strikers, it's a little easier to kind of quantify the quality of that player. For midfielders, defenders, it's a little tougher, but I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying for sure.
No, it's fascinating because I think this is a huge component to education for the American soccer demographic, right? The prototypical suburban American family, you will, because they kind of have to rely on pedigree, you know, they have to rely on credentials, they have to rely on all these sorts of things to kind of have an opinion versus what we're discussing, you know, because also the context of where these players play matters. Like if you put, like you saw when Pirlo came to New York City FC, Pirlo came and he was a disaster. He couldn't do anything. Well, guess what? Did Pirlo suck all of a sudden, or is he just not good, or is MLS so much better than Serie A or something that he couldn't do anything? I mean, come on, you know? No, he had donkeys around him who didn't know how to move, who didn't understand, who, like, you name it. So the context also can make or break a player and opinions of players.
100%. Yeah, if you take a player like Pirlo coming over here to the States, you and I both know that guy is world-class, amazing player. But here, it's just like everybody's just worried about the stats that you can see, right? Mm-hmm. How fast are you running? How much distance did you cover? How many changes of direction did you do? Those things, yes, they're important, but it doesn't really tell me if you're a good footballer or not. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
So I think that's the biggest difference. I feel like here in the States, the stats that you can see matter way more than the things that you can't see. We all know 95% of the game is played off the ball. So what are you doing off the ball that's making you impact the game? Yes, when you're on the ball, you're completing passes, you're getting shots on target. Great. But what about off the ball? So that's where I'm also trying to educate like my clientele, my audience online is, guys, it's not only about going and playing with the ball. It's also about understanding the game, knowing when to move, how to move, why you're moving. Right? Is my movement creating space for myself? Is my movement creating space for my teammate? Does this movement make sense? Am I dragging out an opponent, you know, or am I bringing in pressure? Like those little things those little thoughts should be going through players' heads, but you know, you can tell when players aren't thinking on or off the ball, you know?
Yeah, it reminds me of, because I told you, I quickly try to look at a whole bunch of your videos to get a feel for your work. And I saw some of those educational videos that you did about, I forgot what team it was at the moment, but you had the two eights in central midfield rotating, you know, in and out of space, you know, yeah. And kind of in the process of doing that, you're dragging your marker with you and the other guy's swinging into the open bubble, right? And then to be able to receive, which is great. But here's my question to you. And again, I'm just trying to get to know you and extract golden nuggets for the audience more than anything, have a conversation. Let me frame it this way.
Okay.
In the US, when we're talking MLS, there is a lot of analysis that gets done by MLS reporters or people who follow the game here in MLS. And they'll do analysis after the fact, right? After a game has finished, they're like, oh, look at the winger wasn't doing this, or the tactical setup was poor because of that, you know? And a lot of it is not good analysis. It's just looking at, trying to find things and then writing about it. You know what I'm saying? And it has nothing to do with whether the manager actually meant to do the things that happened in the video or not. Because in my opinion, a vast majority of the time, what you're seeing is not rehearsed. It's not trained. It's not intentional. It's completely random, completely accidental. But you can make a clip and construct a story around it as if this was a decidedly trained role for the player. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I understand what you're saying.
And so when I see your clips, I think you do know what you're talking about, by the way. But at times, I just want a word of caution to the audience, you know, out there who watch these post-game analysis and stuff. It's like, they're just making shit up. You know what I mean? So I don't know if you've come across that or if you think about that at all or don't even care. And I don't even know how, maybe you can react to what I just said one way or another.
No, I 100% agree. I think that a lot of parents, footballers, young footballers don't understand that the game is a bunch of patterns. And those patterns happen in different phases, right? Whether we're defending, attacking, during transitions, right? You could see it when a team is trying to do something consistently throughout the match. You can see it. And you see it because I watch games from like second division Denmark, Switzerland, Belgium. I try to find those games on YouTube and I watch as much as I can because, yes, we all love watching La Liga, Premier League. But I feel like we need to understand that those games are, it's like not real because those players are like perfect. They're barely going to make any mistakes. We saw a Clásico this past weekend. Those players are like nearly perfect. Real Madrid, Barcelona, perfect. Their decision-making, execution of everything is perfect. But when you see like games or matches of lower tiers, then you start seeing like, oh, okay, they're trying this pattern, but it didn't work. Mm-hmm. Why? Oh, because of this, this, and that. Now, if I bring it here to the States, you can see that a lot of it sometimes, I mean, most of the times it's random, right? You could see when a player's thinking or not. Physical attributes, amazing. Competitiveness, great. Oh, they're intense. It's like, where's the brains up here? So I completely agree with what you're saying. It's not just like throwing 22 players on the field. It's the way I was taught is a game of numbers, right? In this area, it's a 2v1. It's a 4v3. It's a 4v2, right? How can my movement create that numerical advantage? If I'm at a disadvantage, how quickly can I react to fix it on the pitch? Right. I'm not going to wait till halftime for coach to tell us, oh, like you have to do this. Right. So that's kind of how I was taught. But again, trying to communicate that and teach is extremely difficult at times because I, you know, on social media, you get a lot of feedback and I've gotten some negative comments like,
you have some haters, huh?
Yeah, plenty. But, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter, you know. Yeah. It's part of it, I guess, for putting yourself out there. But, you know, that's essentially how I've learned the game. And, you know, then we can start talking about, you know, the physical attributes, the mental attributes, the technical attributes, all of those things that obviously make a difference. And, you know, sometimes I feel like American players have exceptional physical attributes that can kind of help them escape from the tactical side. But if they go anywhere else in the world, they're going to get exposed, you know? Maybe not the first day. Maybe not the first day. They're playing great. Bah, bah. Second day, playing great. Bah. But after a couple weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, when they're actually in the environment, yeah, they'll get exposed.
And so it brings up the whole idea of different leagues in general play a little bit different. And I want to be careful here because the American public always thinks in terms of leagues, and they really shouldn't think in terms of leagues. They should think in terms of clubs and countries and cultures, because it's not the league that is developing a player. It's not the league that is or is not physical. It's not the league that is or isn't technical. It's the clubs and the culture that decide how it is that they want to play more than anything else.
Correct.
And so speaking of, to your point about Americans being successful or unsuccessful in certain respects overseas, there's a reason that many of them have better success in Germany and not in Spain, you know, or better success in England, you know, in the championship or in the Premier League and not in Spain. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
like very, very different animals there. In Spain, it's incredibly technical and tactical.
100%.
Incredibly technical and tactical. Not much space all over the place because players aren't diving in defensively. They're more, hey, let's contain them. Let's figure this thing out. And in the Premier League, for instance, it's just back and forth. Da, 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 exchange punches. We don't give a shit, you know, and the crowd roars for every, you know, lunging tackle or something like that. So that causes a lot more space in the Premier League at times. And you can run at people. So a player like Anthony Robinson, who's an incredible athlete, shines as an outside back in the Premier League. And then we get overly excited here in the US. Oh my God, he's world class. He's incredible. And I'm like, guys, if you just look at his decision making, though, that there's issues there. And if you look at the quality of his service or the quality of his passes, there's issues there. You know, put him in La Liga, and he's not going to look like Anthony Robinson in England. It's going to be a completely different player for you.
I 100% agree. I thought the same thing when I saw him. Amazing at joining the attack. Amazing recovering back defensively. But on the ball, can be shaky. Sometimes he does some incredible runs, you know? But I don't know. Not my type of left back, you know?
Not my type. I want a Marcelo. I want a Dani Alves. I want, you know, those sorts of guys. Not the pure raw athleticism guys.
Yeah.
Do you kind of talk to your players and your families about this sort of stuff at all?
Yeah. So I always tell my players to have like a deep self-analysis of what type of player they are. Because, yes, you might be the Anthony type. And, you know, as much as we try to fix your technical, sometimes players have a certain ceiling. So could they stand out in Spain? No, but, you know, maybe this style fits. And that's okay. You know what I mean? It's just, but a lot of players don't understand what type of player they are, what their strengths are and what their weaknesses are. Like a lot of times I ask my players, like, three things you're good at. Oh, I'm fast. I have a good shot. And I'm good defensively 1v1. I'm like, that's not enough. I need you to be very specific into what your strengths are. For example, I'm a center mid. I have a good vision because I like to look around the pitch like 10 seconds before I get the ball. So I know everything that's happening around me. I like to find forward passes. I have a lot of good progressive passes because I've seen it happen before it even happens. You know what I mean? So I understand that that's my strength. For example, as a player growing up, I'm a left-footed center mid. That, you know, everybody's always looking for a lefty, right? So I was like, okay, I'm going to use that to my advantage. My weaknesses, I'm not strong, I'm not fast, I'm not quick. So I have to think quicker than everybody else so that I don't get exposed in those areas, right? Whereas some players just go out to play. So I've had those conversations, definitely, and I always tell them to just watch a lot of football. Because at first, when they're young, I just need you to watch. Like one of my good clients, I've been working with him for a year. He's 10 years old now. And I told his dad, and this was last week, Inter Milan versus Barca. I was like, we're not going to train now. We're going to train after the game because I need him to watch that game. Ended up being one of the best semifinals in Champions League history. Like everybody's talking about it, right? And it was incredible. It was an incredible match. But I'm happy that he saw it, right? After we had that conversation, I'm just picking his brain. He's 10 years old, and he's just like, yeah, I loved it. I loved it. Like, the passion of the crowd. It was going in hard to tackles. He's like, I don't like Lamine Yamal. He's good, but I don't really like him. I'm like, hey, he's really good, my man, you know, but we'll get there. He's a Madrid fan, that's why. But, you know, just being able to be exposed to that is something that, like, I'd rather you watch that and then we go train rather than miss it all together, you know. A lot of these kids learn a lot from just watching.
Yeah. I don't want to contaminate your opinion on this, so I'm just going to ask you first, and then I'll give you what I think. Not that you would change your mind based on what I say anyway, but you kind of hinted at it. There being a ceiling on players. And folks here in the States, they talk about a ceiling also, but many a times not very accurately. You know, so I guess number one, can you tell if a player has a ceiling? When is it like too late for a player to kind of like catch up, you know, or why or why not? Why can't a player break through a ceiling? I don't know if any of those questions kind of make sense.
No, those are great questions. Can I tell if a player has a ceiling? I would say yes. You can tell right away.
What age?
Around, I would say 16, 17.
Okay.
16, 17, 18. How do they break through that ceiling? I would say is their mentality. How much work and sacrifice they're willing to put in order to break through that ceiling. And sometimes, like, you're 17, but it's going to take 3-4 years to actually, like, master this. You know what I mean? If we dig deeper, some players are just not physically gifted. So you're just never going to be as fast as Alphonso Davies. So how do you now adjust? You know, you were talking about Sergio Busquets, Andrea Pirlo. If they were here at 16, 17 years old, they're going to get overlooked. But how would they push through it? How could they actually stand out? And then it's just a matter of, in my opinion, going somewhere or finding a club, finding a coach that values the strengths that you already have as a player. It's hard. Sometimes that search might take years. I remember my dad he played in El Salvador, but not professionally. He played here in the States, not professionally, but he was always just like, just find a coach that values your style of play, you know? And thankfully, I've had a few coaches in my youth that valued my style of play. I had all of these fast players on my team. I was the one that would poner la pausa and find them on a dime every time, you know? So that coach liked how I played. And then some other coaches just like, yeah, you need to gain at least like 15 pounds of muscle, you know, like a Yaya Toure big, like, you know, or sorry, N'Golo Kante, those big guys. Like, I mean, that's not just who I am, right? So that's why it just takes me back to understanding who you are as a player, right? If you have a certain ceiling, what are you willing to do in order to try at least to break through it? You know, how much are you willing to sacrifice?
So you think it's possible?
I think it's possible. But I mean, when I say I think it's possible, it's not like you're going to go from level 8 to 15, right? You might go from like 8 to 8.4 and the difference might be this much.
Yeah.
But to achieve that much, you have to put in an extreme amount of work and an extreme amount of sacrifice because that's just, you know, some players just naturally have it. After, again, being exposed to Douglas Costa or a player like Tyreek George, being exposed to those types of players, I can see it. You know, it doesn't matter how hard you work, how smart you work, getting to that level.
Yeah, no, all good stuff, dude. My perspective on this is, I think the physical one is the most obvious one, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, you're not going to be Alphonso Davies, right? Yeah. You're born, it's genetics at
Correct.
That point. Now, can you improve? Sure. Maybe you go to a personal trainer that, you know, builds the right type of muscle that you need and the right nutrition and the right activities and all that sort of stuff. And you can get better and better, and better. But it still means you have a ceiling. Your physiology gives you a certain potential and that's it. You know, unless you start taking steroids or God knows what kind of illegal things. But the physical, I think everybody kind of gets.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Then it gets a little bit more and more gray, you know, after that. Like technique, for instance. Mm-hmm. So technique, people get mad at me. Years ago, I would say things like Weston McKennie is not, he has a ceiling. He is not going to be Xavi Hernandez. He is not going to be Andres Iniesta. He's not going to be Tony Cruz. He's not going to be Modric. He's not going to be, and I'm obviously being exaggerating here and giving you world-class player examples because it makes the point obvious at that point. Players have a ceiling, in my opinion, and Weston McKennie will never, ever, ever, no matter how hard he works, will never reach those levels from a technical perspective, you know? Yeah. And then the other example I would always give was when Jordan Morris was coming on the scene and the Seattle Sounders drafted him and they, you know, the media made him out to be something amazing. He's the next Messi or God knows what they did over here. And I'm like, guys, this is a player that has no soccer IQ, no brains. You know, he's athletic. He puts his head down. He kicks the ball forward and then he beats the guy in a horse race to the end line. And then hopefully he's not on his left foot because he has zero left foot. You know, he'll have to cut back and try to service in if he's playing on the left. But from a tactical perspective, the guy is never going to be a soccer brain ever. Oh, well, Gary, he's only 19. Like, give it time. You know, no, it's too late, guys. It's too late. The soccer brain has been developed a certain way. It's over for him. Again, my opinion, my humble opinion. And you know, it plays out over time because you look back, you're like, yeah, look at where he can't do it. That's not the type of player he is. And then I still don't know what my opinion on mentality is.
Okay.
Necessarily. Cause I think maybe, I mean, you hear stories like David Goggins, right? The ex-Navy SEAL or whatever. And he became a fat slob and all of a sudden he said, F this, I'm going to get serious. And you know, everybody knows the story there. So maybe people can become mental monsters when they were mental midgets. I just haven't seen it personally. You know, it just seems that the habits that one develops growing up and the circle of friends that you have over the course of time and the family environment that you've got and the education that you've gotten, all that stuff kind of builds your mentality a certain way. And then once you're like 16 or 17, it kind of feels like it's game over for you too, if you haven't corrected it.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. That's kind of like my perspective on ceilings. But people get mad, Miguel, because I'll judge American players. I'm like, no chance. Gary, he's only 19. Like, what? Give him time. Or he's only 17. No, it's over. It's too late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say for the mental ceiling, I feel like maybe this is just me being maybe a little biased because I personally have achieved so much just by changing the way I think. Like I would have never imagined having this conversation, for example, right? But it's just a matter of putting yourself out there and doing the things that make you super uncomfortable. But majority of the people will not do that. And that's the number one step, right? So like, let's say you have a young 19-year-old like Jordan Morris, like, are they actually willing to at least learn a little bit more of the soccer IQ or the soccer brain, right? Or they're just like, you know, no, you know, F that, I'm not. That's not my game, then yeah, they're never gonna reach that boom, you know what I mean? But I do think that there's still a little room for improvement. But again, when I say improvement, it's like this much. It's not like boom. The tactical side, yeah, again, it's just I feel like having just understandings of reading those moments, right? It's like playing chess. Like, are you thinking like a step ahead, two steps ahead, three steps ahead, right? We have like a Xavi Hernandez that would think like 10 steps ahead. You know what I mean? Am I ever going to be like Xavi Hernandez? No. But can I at least get to like 3 steps ahead, right? Most players don't even think 1 step ahead. Most younger players, right?
Yeah.
So that's the process. And that, again, it takes time. And ultimately, it's discipline and time that's not going to be done in a year or 2 years or 3 years. That's why we always say like we have to work with younger players because they're a sponge. You can mold them however they need to get molded, obviously according to what they're already shown. But I think at a younger age, you can develop actually that mentality to like actually push through. So
the parents play a huge role there, man.
100. Yeah. Things that happen outside at the home is a little different, right? That's out of my control. But I always tell my players, every time you step onto the pitch or you walk through those gates, you have to start thinking that you're going to have the best training ever. Even if your training was shit, you're thinking, walking into it, I'm going to have the best training ever. Because now, subconsciously, you're trying to move towards the best training ever. And for a 10-year-old to be thinking that every single day for the next 8 years of their life, yes, something is definitely going to work in that sense, you know. It doesn't always, right? We've seen it happen, but...
How many times a week do your players see you? I'm sure everybody's a little bit different. Yeah. What would you say?
I say maximum 3 times a week with me. The other days, they have to go with their team. I don't want to see you more than 3 times a week because then it's just me and you all day. No, like you can do these things on your own because I think that also helps on developing their mentality. And then obviously we know that soccer is a team sport. Go play pickup with your friends. Go to training. Go play at the park with random players. Like, you don't have to see me every day. You know what I mean? Yeah. I know, like, we have a good time, but I don't want to see you every single day. So I always try to limit it to 3 times a week for private personal trainings. Summertime now, I actually have a group. So it's like a group of like 5 to 10, sometimes 15 players. And that's where like, yeah, but the more times we're together in my environment, we're having fun, we're enjoying the game, we're playing lots of small-sided, then yes, see me every day if you can.
What do most people do or want to do? Do they see you once a week, twice a week? Like what do most people do?
Once or twice a week.
And they do you point them to certain videos that you have produced on Instagram to teach them things, or do they just they just do it on
their own? Yeah, like every question I always have, like a video or something to show them. And I have my longer form YouTube videos. I have the TikToks, the Instagrams that they just watch as well. But I sometimes just try to get information out of them. Like I ask them questions. Okay, you don't really understand what I'm asking, so go watch this video. If you have a question after that, I'll show you another video or explain it more in depth, right? But again, majority of my players, we're not at that stage tactically yet. It's more so just like control the ball first.
Totally.
And then we can talk about the other things, you know? Like, for example, like right now I'm working with a young 14-year-old, plays at Charlotte Academy, fantastic player. We've just been working on his mentality because we, at the beginning, 4 months ago, doubted himself a lot, right? And 4 months later, now he's playing over in Maryland for the MLS Flex Fest. And he's like, the meeting before, he's like, Miguel, I'm going in to dominate. I'm not just going into play. I'm going to dominate. I'm like, that's right. He's getting looked at by the youth national team. You know, that's one of his goals. Great. But I'm like, okay, so what are you going to do in order to make that happen? Like, how are you going to move? How are you going to think? How are you going to act when nobody's watching? Right. So with him, it's a little different. Now we can take it a step further, but it all depends on what part of the journey that player's on. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Totally, man. Do you make all your own videos? Obviously you're there, your face is there, but I'm talking about the actual
game
editing, all that stuff.
Yes, I make all of it. I make
you're
all
an
of it.
You're an animal, dude. That's got to take forever, no?
Not anymore, because I at the beginning, yes, but now I know exactly what I saw and I know exactly what to say and how to clip it up. It takes me max like 20, 30 minutes.
Oh, brilliant,
just,
dude.
Just that like one part, you know? I try to keep it really, really short, sweet, and direct.
I hope you don't mind me asking, and we can strip this if you like from here because it's a competitive advantage for you. What software do you use to do the soccer stuff?
I use Once Video Analyzer.
Is that a Peruvian company?
It's actually a company out of Croatia.
Oh, no shit. Okay.
Yeah. So they're amazing. They've helped me a lot with just making these illustrations, just trying to bring in what I see to life. And I've been working with them for the past year and a half now.
That's amazing. Yeah. So you have to collaborate with them to do it, or do you like have it and then you go ahead and do all the.
Yeah. So they give me access to the software and we have a collaboration going on where, you know, I shout them out every time I make a post and
got it.
I have access to the software.
Got
and
it.
I have a special code. So if anybody's interested, use my code, you get a discount and use their software as well.
Oh, brilliant.
But
man.
It's very user-friendly, very user-friendly. So I've used all the other ones and it's just too much. This one's very user-friendly.
That's awesome. No, because all our stuff for a while now had, I mean, we were using like the professional generic video editing tools like Adobe Premiere, Final Cut Pro, all that stuff. That's not specific to what we need. Yeah. So we had to invent all kinds of things by ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll send it over to you so you can have it.
No, it's incredible, dude. Yeah. The work that you put together is incredible. And I'm shocked that you're saying like now you could just whip them out like in under an hour or something. You really like 30 minutes you can whip out a video?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Like Benny, when you mentioned, you know, you had reached out or you guys were communicating, he's like, yeah, Gary, like the Barca game just ended. I think it was the Barca game. And this guy already has a video about it. And I'm like, how is that? I'm like, how the hell does he do that?
Yeah, no, I found the website that has the replays of the matches and I just try to download the matches quickly. Yeah. And then after that, I upload it to the software, do my illustrations as much as possible, whatever it is that I want to talk about, boom, upload it.
That's incredible, man.
Nothing is scripted. It's just all up here, you know?
No, of course, yeah. Of course. No, but that's also how you can tell whether somebody knows or they don't know. Mm-hmm. You feel me? Like, I know what happens here. I'm not going to talk shit. I talk enough shit, you know, on all the episodes, but I know what happens here. So it's awesome that our paths cross, dude. I definitely want, you know, the folks that have been with us for such a long time to go to your channel if they aren't already there, you know, and take a look at what it is that we're talking about.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. That'd be great.
Hey, dude, so you're in Miami. Have you been to an Inter Miami game?
Yes. Yeah, I right now I'm not in Miami, but yes, I live in Miami. I'm maybe like 15, 20 minutes away from the stadium. I have seen Messi live 3 times, maybe. Incredible atmosphere. But then again, I feel like it's just going to die out when he leaves, which sucks, you know. But right now, I'm not going to say anything negative. It's fantastic to have him there. It's just, it's incredible. Like, it feels surreal sometimes. Obviously, you have Busquets, Jordi Alba, all those guys. You can just see the difference up here.
Yeah.
For sure. I had the pleasure of almost stepping on the pitch with Messi. That probably would have been an amazing experience. We scrimmaged Inter Miami's first team, closed doors, maybe 2.5 months before Messi actually signed.
Mm. No?
So that could have been a crazy experience. But yeah, it's an incredible atmosphere for sure. People are enjoying it. People love it.
No, I'm curious. I also asked because you said that you had gone to DC United games growing up. You know, I imagine it was during the time of Echeverri and Pescadito or whatever that, all those fools.
Yeah.
And yeah. So do you still keep up with watching MLS, or are you like more focused on other things?
I watch it when I can. I do keep score of DC United, and it's just like another loss after loss after loss. And it's hard because, like, you know, that's the club I grew up watching. I still love them. I still rep their gear all the time because, you know, they have a special place in my heart. But it's just, it's unfortunate. And I feel like now it's a little bit more difficult to watch games, right? You have to have the Apple Pass and everything. And
it's like, eh.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, hey, just be honest. It's okay, dude. I know your clients are here in the U.S. and I know MLS runs the whole show here, but, you know, sometimes you just got to be straightforward, dude. Yeah. I'm not shy about it. I'm out there blasting people.
Yeah. I'll watch when I can, but I don't really feel the need to watch.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Do you think it's also a function of maybe getting older, getting more mature, working in the ecosystem, that maybe that desire to be part of MLS in one way or another kind of fades away? I don't want to put words in your mouth because you were a DC United guy. And I know somebody who's been with us since the beginning, since we first started publishing things online, he goes by the handle Bolivian Yank. Okay. You can find him on X or whatever.
I've seen him on X. Yeah.
Yeah. So, great soccer person, but he was also a DC United guy from the very beginning. And then over the course of time, when he starts seeing what MLS is all about, he just stops supporting it. He's like, nah, I'm just not going to support this anymore. And he doesn't really care anymore about DC United, even though he had all those warm feelings inside, which reminds me of, I imagine, how you were, you know, with being on your dad's shoulders or whatever, watching the matches. And I was the same way, man. 1996, I was at the first ever MLS first Galaxy game ever, you know, and I went to the stadium all the time and watched all the time. And you feel it. It was during the time of Tampa Bay Mutiny and Dallas Burn and all that stuff. I'm like, oh yeah, this is so cool. And then something happens over the course of time where I'm like, nah, you know, with my time, I'd rather tune into other things.
Yeah. Yeah, no, now that I've learned how like MLS works, and we all know it's a monopoly, right? The league owns the clubs and everything. It's frustrating for sure, but I still think I will still support DC United always, you know, regardless.
You.
but it just sucks to see, because it's like literally black and white from what I saw growing up, right? And I know there's a lot of people that have been DC United fans from the beginning that will probably agree with me. But I mean, it is what it is now, right?
Yeah. The stadium's empty, I imagine. I haven't watched a DC United game in forever.
Honestly, I don't know. Probably. I don't know. I haven't been to a DC United game in a while either. But that just goes to show, even when I go visit and they're playing there, I just don't have the feeling to go to the stadium and do all that, because they don't have the Barra Brava anymore. It's just a different culture now, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what we talked about a little bit earlier. It's just like each club brings its own culture, and each club has their own identity, where I feel like DC United lost all that.
So, did you train today?
No, not today.
Hey, are you still in shape? Do you like run? Do you show the players what's up or no?
Yeah, I'm still in shape. I'm still playing. I'm 31 now, so I'm still relatively young. I'm still doing the transition to be a full-time coach. I'm actually here in Oklahoma preparing for the TST tournament.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this is one of my last big tournaments. I have a baby due in July.
7v7?
7v7, yeah. We're playing, our group has Atletico Madrid, Kun Agüero's team, right? So it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. But yeah, I'm still in shape. I'm still playing. I still show these players how to do things.
That's badass.
Yeah.
That's badass, man. You said you're a lefty?
I'm a lefty, yeah.
They're the special ones, dude, always.
Yeah.
Center mid?
Center mid lefty, yeah.
I don't know. There's something about center mids, and especially center mid lefties. It's like, I don't know, our favorite players are always center mids, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, if they're lefties, that puts them over the top. Yeah. And I really think like they just understand the game better. Now, I'm not the lefty situation, center mid. They just understand the game better than everybody. Maybe it's because they're surrounded throughout the entire game.
Yes, I agree. Based on like my audience, the fullbacks, players that are fullbacks are the ones that always want to learn the most. Majority of my online clients are fullbacks, and they just want to learn the position way more. Strikers and wings, those players act like they already got it figured out. Center mids and center backs are often the ones that I would say kind of understand the game a little bit more than others. Goalkeepers, I don't really work with goalkeepers. That's like a whole different world. You have to be like really immersed as a goalkeeper coach to actually teach the keepers. So I primarily only work with field players.
Got it, Miguel. Listen, I want to be respectful of your time, and usually we keep things to an hour, but I do have one more thing
I want to get
your opinion on. And like always, I'm not putting you on the spot. I just want to know.
Because
especially this is a topic that came up with one of my colleagues. We just had a beer together a week ago. He coaches teams. Mm-hmm. He's a DOC. It's a non-MLS Next organization. And a lot of his players, you know, go to personal trainers, right? And, you know, the topic just started developing whereby we were saying, yeah, like it seems like a lot of personal trainers at times will do some dirty things, right? Like saying, oh, your team coach doesn't know what he's doing. He's playing you out of position, like, criticizing and kind of laying the blame on the team coach, right? That's number one. And then number two, the other dirty thing that happens at times, and I know this from experience, obviously, is the personal trainers will be used by other teams and other clubs to maybe recruit players away from their existing team or their existing club. So I just want to throw that out there and ask you, does that happen, generically speaking? And yeah, whatever other reactions or thoughts you might have to that effect.
When it comes to the player's position on the pitch, I always tell them, okay, well, I think you're more of a right back. If your coach is playing you center mid, I mean, great. You know, listen to your coach. Your coach always has the word because he's seeing you in a team environment, in a competitive environment, and he's seeing, he or she's seeing you how you play with other players. I'm seeing you on a 1v1, right? Mm-hmm. But based on, because I've seen thousands of players, I go to events as well to do scouting and all of those things. So I've seen thousands of players, and I can just tell by the way you move, by the way you control the ball, and your body composition, what type of player you are, or where you would fit best on the field. But at the end of the day, if the coach likes you in this position, you listen to them first, right? Can you maybe ask them to play the position that I'm saying? Yeah, of course, but don't, yeah, I wouldn't say like, oh, your coach doesn't know what he's doing. Sometimes I've had players, yeah, coach is playing me this position. I'm like, really? Oh, interesting. Well, you know, just learn the position then, right? Because every coach, the game's a game of opinions. So every coach might use you in different areas of the pitch, and you have to be able to adjust. And then when it comes to recruiting other players, I've had clubs ask me, oh, do you have a 2012, a 2011? And, you know, if I have a player that is without a club, then yes. But majority of the times, the players I train with already have a club. So I just don't, I don't have anybody. I try not to get involved into that because I don't want to have like a stain on my name, right? Yeah. I'm just there to get your player better, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. No, at times, because I advocate a lot for coaches, and I felt for him when he was sharing these stories. And I'm like, I know because I've been around the game. I've been involved in this stuff for decades at this point. Yeah. So I know what goes on. I'm like, yeah, I know. He's like, yeah, but Gary, it sucks because they have no accountability. Like the personal trainer has no accountability to anything, to anybody. So they can say whatever they want. And even if it's in a good way, like how you just described, mm-hmm. it gets into the parents' heads, right? And now there's a conflict or a tension between their situation on their team and the opinions that they heard outside of the team, obviously. And so I feel for the coaches at times because it starts complicating their life a bit. Yeah. Then the parents start saying, oh, well, yeah, well, if you would play my kid where he really should be playing, or and they might not say anything that it's the personal trainer, nothing, but it's just in their head.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, for me, my concern is the audience and education of the audience. Yeah, just for the audience to be aware of, hey, guys, like, I think it's important to listen to both your coach and to listen to your personal trainer as well. Just be aware of the two different contexts mm-hmm. that exist. 100%. That's all. Be super aware of the context. Because obviously the guy who has you as part of the team, he might have somebody who's the defensive mid already, who's leaps and bounds above you, you know what I'm saying? But he wants to get you on the field still. So he'll put you as an eight, or he'll put you as a outside back or center. You know what I mean? Like, exactly. like who knows? And the personal trainer doesn't know the whole story.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's why I always say that the club coach, the team coach has, you should listen to them first because they see you play every day. Right. And then I've had situations where, oh, my kid isn't playing. Well, mm-hmm. before you think about leaving the team, my dad used to tell me this all the time. It's your fault. You're not playing because you're not working hard enough in practice. It's your fault because you didn't play good this game. It's your fault because you're not showing that you want to play. So then I'm now thinking like, okay, well, what can I do to force my coach to play me right now? It's not just get up and go to another team. It's do what you need to do in order to get game time. Like if you're sitting in that shit for like a year, okay, maybe we can look to go somewhere else. But if it's just been a month that you're not getting as much game time as before or whatever, like look inward, right? Be okay with playing a different position and learning a different position. Because I always tell these young players, the most important thing, whatever club you go to, is to get game time. Play the game. Mm-hmm. That's how you're going to learn. That's how you're going to get better. That's how you're going to gain confidence. But if you're just there to train and have fun, okay, that's a different goal. Then we're not on the same page. You know what I mean? So it just comes down to just play more games. Go where you can play more games. If you're not playing more games, be willing to sacrifice and learn a new position. It's happened to me. I've had to play left back before. I don't like it, but I want to play, so I'll play left back. And I played it decently as a young kid, but you know, center mid. And that's where I am now. The other thing that bothers me, Gary, I don't know what your thoughts are. When I have a brand new player and I ask them, like, what position do you play? Oh, I play a winger, center back, fullback, and sometimes striker. They have like five positions, right? And I'm like, no, you got to choose one and then one backup. That's it, right? Because if you play everywhere, you play nowhere.
Right? I love that you said that, because we have a lot of parents in our audience and they hear a lot of bullshit, you know, out there in the world saying, oh, the coaches should be rotating all the players to play all the positions so that they can see all the positions and it's great for development. And it's like, no, dude, if you are constantly rotating, one day you're this, the next day you're that, and the other day you're this, you're not learning anything at all.
Yeah.
Like, there's one thing, like how you were saying, every player kind of has a style and kind of starts kind of fitting into a certain type of role. I mean, and you're a center back. You're not going to be a winger. I'm sorry, bro. You're not a winger. But aside from that, I think you need to have what you said, one position, maybe a backup, at most, a third one that's very related to the other ones.
Yeah.
To actually learn the game.
Correct. Because there's multiple positions, like a couple positions that have similar, like, game actions. A center back and a defensive mid are primarily going to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. A fullback and a winger are primarily going to do the same things, right? Just different areas of the pitch. A number 10 and a striker sometimes may do the same things, right? So, but it doesn't make sense to me when you have like a winger play as a center back or a center back play as a winger or things of that nature. When you have like this, you know, 11-year-old boy that's already 6 feet tall that can't really run.
Right.
Why would you put him on the wings? Like, it's just not. Maybe they like. I was like that. I was a kid. I wanted to be like Cristiano Ronaldo. As I got older, I realized I don't have Cristiano's speed. I don't have the agility. I'm better at distributing the ball. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's also another thing that I feel like parents and players should learn every day.
Brilliant, Miguel. Listen, dude. Any other things that you wanted to cover or talk about or anything that we didn't touch on?
Gary, we could go on for hours, man. I feel like we could talk on for hours. But I think I just have one more question. What led you to actually creating 343? Because I feel like when I first saw your stuff as a younger player and how you were working with the youth teams, and I know that you've mentioned some players, if I'm not mistaken, Alex Mendez.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from that time, right?
But, yeah.
So, like, what led you to actually putting it out there and trying to educate, I guess, the audience, the masses?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know if there's one answer to it.
Okay.
Where my head takes me is one, passion. So, obviously, me and my brother are very passionate about the sport. Two is the work that my brother was doing, in my opinion, obviously I'm biased, his brother, was remarkable, but like remarkable, like out of this world, never before seen in the United States. Mm-hmm. Remarkable. And so as a consequence of that, when he took over this U11 team, I mean, his best work was before this, and people just don't know it because there's not much record of it, you know, but when he took over this U11 team, We were kind of sad. It's kind of like, oh shit, 10-year-olds, you know, this blows. We know, and we were just coaching 18-year-olds, right?
Yeah.
So he took over this team and he was doing outrageous things with this team, never before seen. And so I said, you know what? We need to film this thing. So I went and figured out how I can film from elevation. And that's when I came across this HiPod system that was being used for American football. And so I went and broke the piggy bank and spent like $7,000 on this camera system. Nobody was doing this, by the way, Miguel, back in the day.
Yeah.
And so I just set that thing up to one of the games and I filmed the game. And after the game, I kind of cut it up, you know, a little bit. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is a good 12 minutes, you know, worth of stuff. And I just published it to YouTube. And next thing I knew, it had over 1 million views. And the English newspapers and the Spanish newspapers were coming out saying, look, the Americans finally know how to play football. And so that was in 2012, but I actually started writing articles in 2009. Again, I think it was because of the passion and I wanted to just teach Americans, because to me, a lot of it was a chip on my shoulder as well.
Yeah.
Because I was a player. I was a center mid. I played as a 10. I thought I was good. In retrospect, I don't think I was good enough to be a professional, but I thought I got the short end of the stick here in the youth system and not having an opportunity to maybe at least maybe have a chance, right? And I had a lot of American coaches that didn't know how the fuck to play soccer. They didn't know anything. And so I was super frustrated. So I think the combination of all of those things coupled with the Argentinian blood in me, and we're hotheads and we're outspoken and we don't give a fuck, you know what I'm saying, when it comes to football, all of it came together to kind of start 3-4-3.
Yeah. Okay. That's a great answer. I don't know. I've always just wondered, like, because I've always just been super intrigued with your work, you and your brother's work, and it's just been amazing to see. I've learned so much, like, now being on the coaching side, just, you know, you see the game. Well, I guess I see the game similar to how you see it. And it's just great to connect with like-minded people that are in the space, right? So I think what you're doing is fantastic for the American game, right? We're trying to at least, like, I'm always cheering for the USA. I want them to do great. We live here, right? 2026 World Cup is next year. We hope, but at the same time, it's difficult. But I never pray on their downfall. I just hope that, you know, eventually we will get there, because we have an abundance of resources. Yeah. And it's just needs to click, you know?
Yeah. So yeah. No, I appreciate that, Miguel. I appreciate that. Maybe next time we'll hop on and talk a little bit about those last comments that you made about, you know, the ecosystem as a whole, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm very opinionated on that. And I saw you had a video on promotion relegation as well.
Yeah.
Which I literally saw moments before you hopped on.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other ball of wax. But I hope you come back on, dude.
Yeah, for sure.
And we have another conversation, yeah?
For sure,
Where can people find you, dude?
You can find me on Instagram, at Grande Sports Training. You can find me on TikTok, YouTube, at Grande Sports Training. I also have another YouTube channel called Footy Tactics, where I dive deeper into tactics for each position. Longer form videos. So you can find
cool,
me all
brother.
Over. Yeah.
All right, so if you're ever in town, hit me up, yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
Gary, all right, Miguel.
Thank you so much. Have a good rest of your day, okay?
You too. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers, everyone, and keep building.